If you're listening to this podcast, there's a really high chance that you are also interested in cookbooks. So I wanted to let you guys know that my cookbook, Elevated Everyday Paleo, is officially out wherever you get your books from. It's a collection of recipes that I believe make everyday cooking just a bit more special, and I hope it reminds you that there's art in so many little moments of life. You can grab it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookseller. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Manual Mode. I'm Mariah Sautel, and this is a show all about creativity and photography and the ups and downs of running a creative business. So today, I'm so excited for this interview. I felt so inspired after talking with her, and I have had some imposter syndrome creeping up this week, and this guest just helped me dissolve it and re-inspired me to go just make things. So today I'm talking with Allie Bow. Allie is a Chicago-based food and drink photographer, studio owner, and a new mom of the most adorable child ever. Allie is queen of the elaborately styled flat lay and has some of the most stunning motion shots my eyes have ever seen. She's also a prop styling fiend, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little jealous of her masterful collection. Aside from the creative end, Allie is a rock star businesswoman, and I'm so excited to learn more about how she left her corporate job and has maintained such a good client roster throughout her pregnancy journey. Oh, and she's also a murderino. If you know, you know. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Allie Bow. So, Allie, welcome to the show. I am excited to learn more about how you switched from corporate to this whole creative entrepreneurship thing, because I know personally that's quite a leap. So can you talk me through just kind of what you were doing before this and then what that transition was like?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for that lovely intro. That was really nice to hear. I've been full-time doing food photography for about 3 years now, and it took a lot to get here, but we're here finally. I graduated college right before the economy tanked, and it was very important to find a job and keep a job. And if you found a job, try and keep that job, because we knew everything was going under. 2008 was bad year for most businesses. And I happened to kind of fall backwards into a startup company, and it was a mobile based, and it was right before the iPhone came out. And I stayed with them for about 7 years. So I got experience in all kinds of different facets. It was a small startup. I was a third person hired, and I went from a community manager, because it was essentially a social network, to the director of business development by the time I left. So I managed partnerships with agencies and various other mobile properties and wireless carriers and stuff like that. And I was with them for a long time. I did some creative stuff, but not really. And it was always kind of, creativity was always in my back pocket. It was always something that I kind of kept for myself. I used to write a lot more than I do now. But that was kind of my creative passion at the time. And then I bought a camera and I started to play around with it. And I started a food blog. And I don't think I realized at the time just how bad my photos were, until I started finding other food bloggers who were doing a great job. And I remember finding the blog What Katie Ate, and she's an Australian photographer. And I bought her cookbook, and I was just like in awe of all of the photos. And I started to get more into cooking and learning. And my husband has always worked in the service industry and some really like higher end restaurants and stuff. So we became food people. And that was in our like mid to late 20s. And we moved to California. And I continued to work for that company, and I did ad sales for a while. So I was in the room with big ad agencies, and I kind of saw the whole process of selling an ad campaign, which serves me well to this day, obviously, and translates into what I'm doing a lot now. But at the time, right after we moved to California, my mom had a massive brain aneurysm and a stroke. And so we moved from California back to Massachusetts to help out my dad. And then we took my parents and we moved them to Chicago with us, because this is where my husband's from. He's got a big family. They're our support system. And it's nice to be out here in the Midwest. So that opportunity when we moved from Massachusetts to Chicago was really, you know, a blessing in disguise, because it gave me the opportunity to leave the corporate world. I stepped away from a job that I had had for a couple years, and I wasn't doing anything creative. I had a long commute and I hated it. I used to bring my camera and my drone in the car with me. So on my lunch break, I would go fly my drone and I would go take pictures of stuff and like go find farms in Massachusetts to take photos of. And I knew something else was calling me. I just didn't know it was specifically going to be food. So when we moved out to Illinois, I didn't look for a job, which I thought maybe initially I would. I thought I would maybe go the ad agency route again in Chicago. And I decided to not look for a job. And I discussed with my dad, you know, he kept us afloat for a while. And he says now, like, I didn't believe it was going to happen at the time. And he was like, but I knew to trust you. And he was like, and you're doing it. And I can't believe you're doing it. And he sees, like, we live with them. He sees me every day working my ass off. So he knows he made the right call. But yeah, I mean, it was a lot, and it was a lot to ask of him to, you know, keep the lights on for a good six months to a year before I became profitable, but now we are. So
I love that. That's so much.
a lot of cross-country moves in about 3 years.
Yeah. I'm curious, because you had so much invested in this previous career, did you ever feel any guilt around leaving that? Like, you had put all that time and investment into that past career. Not that you should have felt that, but I, having done something similar, I'm curious kind of what your feelings were around that at the time. Like, you had all this invested in that career path and then decided to switch.
Right, right. And like I said, like in 2008, when I graduated, like, it was like, you, the side hustle wasn't really a thing. Like, and people didn't, their Uber didn't exist. Like, people didn't work for themselves. There was not like this freelance community that there is now. And so going out on my own, even though it was 2017 and a lot of things have changed, it still felt like, can I really do this? Like, can I really start a business? Like, I've worked for somebody else for so long. And even things like health insurance, like, you have to consider all of that. Like, that was the thing that my parents, as soon as I graduated, was like, get a job, you need health insurance. So stepping away from all of that, you know, was, it was definitely within my comfort zone. But I knew, even though my previous roles were not creative at all, it was going to serve me well in this endeavor. And the result is that I can craft an email really well spoken and well worded fairly easily. I can be on a call with the CEO of a company and not make an idiot of myself. You know, like, I've been in the room with Fortune 500 companies, and I've done all this, and I've seen, the biggest thing is I've seen ad budgets, and I know how much they are. And I know that my work is worth it and stuff. So I think it gives me a lot of confidence to have seen that side of the house, and to know if I'm talking to somebody at an ad agency, like, that's kind of what I was doing for a while. So like, I know what their life is like, and I can envision myself in their shoes and, you know, try and make their life a little bit easier too, because agency people work really, really hard.
Yeah. I've noticed that with those of us who started in the agency world, I feel like the big upper hand that it gives us is that we understand how to work with clients. And we understand the money that is actually at play in the situation, which are two things that I think most people struggle with the most. So it's really one of the best backgrounds you can come to this from, that really sets you up to get past those really difficult things. Not to say that it is easy necessarily to still deal with people and money and all of that. I don't know if it's ever super easy, but that definitely sets you up a little better.
For sure. Yeah, no, it definitely feels like I have a little bit of insider information every time I get on a call with people.
Yeah. I'm curious. I know you mentioned What Katie Ate. Were there any other influences at the time that you were following or that made you really want to make the switch, or even people now that kind of inspire you?
Yeah. No, honestly, like, back then, Jenna Marbles on YouTube. I was just, and Grace Helbig and stuff was really big. And I was just like, these people are like, they're just creating content and this is like their job. Like what could I do that is in that vein? And then also, I mean, you said it in my intro, My Favorite Murder was just coming out when I was at that job and I had a long commute and I would listen to podcasts. And I saw that they took this and they ran with it and they became huge. And also I listened to a podcast called Don't Keep Your Day Job. And it was just all people that, you know, I forget her name, but she is a songwriter and she interviews people that have, you know, quit corporate world and followed their dreams and stuff. And I just felt like she was speaking directly to me every single time. I was like, I need to get out of this. Like, but you know, that commute gave me some alone time to really think and listen to podcasts and listen to audiobooks and just kind of get prepared. Cause I knew when I was leaving Massachusetts, I knew I was leaving my job. And then I was just like, I'm going to go full force into this. And I shot every single day for, I don't know, all of 2018. I bought my newer camera at the time and just went all in. And I was out of the room next to me, our little dining room. And I quickly outgrew that space. And then we started to take over this room, which is the biggest room in the house.
Well, let's talk more about that then, because in the glimpses I've seen of this room, I am in awe of it. So what was the process like of kind of building out that studio space and convincing your husband to give you that massive room for that? What was that process?
I mean, my husband and my dad saw the dining room and saw what had become of it. And they were like, you need more space. And I was like, I agree. And then I started, you know, getting bigger clients and stuff. And like, I have taken over our garage too, to hold product a lot. I have a separate studio fridge now. Like it's gotten out of hand. But yeah, this room was meant to be a living room, clearly. And it's kind of sunken down. It is right in the middle of the house and it didn't have doors on either side. So if you can avoid that, I recommend it because I get interrupted all day long. But it's very nice. I can't complain. So we put in hardwood floors, painted everything white. My dad kept asking if I really wanted everything white. He painted it for me. And I was like, yes, I do. I want the light to bounce around. And then I did pipe shelving. So everything is open so I can see all of my props because I work very visually. So as I'm starting to, you know, set up a scene, I like to be able to look at all of my coffee mugs and pick the one that I think makes the most sense or switch it out. Same thing with plates and stuff like that and glassware. And I'm swiftly running out of space for glassware that I feel like there's always something new for cocktails that I need. I actually just bought margarita glasses yesterday. And I said, I couldn't believe that there was some piece of glassware that I didn't already own, but sure enough, there was. So yeah, this has served me really, really well. It's a very big room. But that being said, we're moving onward and upward and I'm going out to our barn and I'm taking over. There's an apartment out there and I'm in the process of setting up a studio kitchen because our kitchen in our house is the kitchen in our house. It's our family kitchen and we're trying to cook for 4 adults and a baby out of it. And so it's very hard when I have big shoots to be cooking in there and stuff. And it's right off my studio, which is nice, but it would be very nice to have a studio kitchen where I can, you know, film videos from start to finish and not be on an induction burner or something like that. So that's the whole plan. We're in the process of doing that. And I hope to kind of take everyone along with me as I do that and move out there, which is super exciting.
I'm really excited to watch this process. I've been in a similar spot of just like, in order to scale, I can no longer work in this situation. So I'm excited to let you be my guinea pig so I can watch this process.
I know. Any tips from anyone that has done stuff like this? Cause I'm just trying to, I went into IKEA was actually backed up. We were going to do an IKEA kitchen and they were backed up. They're out of cabinets for like, I don't know. They have to replenish their forest that they own is what I was told. So I went into a local place called Menards and picked out cabinets there. And I was trying to explain to them what it was for. And they were so confused by my predicament and what I wanted everything to be kind of camera ready. I didn't want glare on stuff and a very specific set of needs for a studio kitchen. So I can't wait to see how it comes together. Right now we are in the process of figuring out appliances and a cooktop and stuff like that.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah.
That's great.
Can't wait.
So you have so many stunning images. I could look at them all day. And I feel like I can really identify your style when I see an image that's yours, but I'm curious But you also don't really repeat yourself. So I'm curious how you have worked on developing that style, but also how you keep things new.
Yeah, thank you. That's very, very nice to hear. Yeah, I try to not be too repetitive with stuff. But even when I look at my own work, I'm like, every single thing has a diagonal line going like this and then like this. Like I pick things out that I think I do repeat, but I try and keep my portfolio and my Instagram kind of a wide variety of stuff to attract clients and to kind of just show my breadth of what I can capture. I like to shoot dark and moody. I like to shoot light and airy. I can do both. I can do like super commercial, but I like to, you know, play with light as much as I can and kind of have some real emotion behind the images that I create for myself. And most of my Instagram is stuff that I create for myself. It's not client work. I share some client work, but for the most part, a lot of the time I feel like it just doesn't really fit in with what I'm doing there. That's what my portfolio is for on my site. You can see more of my client work, but, yeah, I kind of just let whatever I am eating that week or what I'm sourcing for shoots with a client, especially florals. I love playing with flowers. That's one of my favorite things. And I also like to include like, you know, props that are like significant in my life. And I like to do stuff, that just really kind of is a reflection of where I am in life at that moment. And I can look at an image of mine and kind of remember what was going on at that time behind the scenes, which is kind of crazy.
So you mentioned Instagram, and I have a deep frustration with one particular thing about this, and I think you'll probably understand what I'm saying. So there is kind of this strange obsession with having a large following. And I feel like new people in this space think that they have to have that. And if I do a Q&A, all these people are like, how do I grow my account? And I'm really like trying to get people to understand that most of the most successful food photographers have a following under 10,000. Like it's not a requirement. In some ways it can actually hurt you because you're trying to play to this algorithm that really favors things shot on a white background and they're all kind of the same looking. So I'm curious if you can speak to that and how you have been successful without having a large following and how you actually do get clients if it's not through having a super large Instagram following.
Yeah. I feel like I just stopped caring. Like I posted something the other day and it got like 30 likes and I was like, whatever. I don't care anymore. I'm not going to like play the games of Instagram where like now I should be posting reels and I should be doing this. And like all of my friends who are food photographers, like I love watching them, but everyone feels compelled to do like styling reels now and stuff like that. And like, which I like doing, but like, I also I barely have the time to do what I'm already doing. And I'm not
right.
Put more pressure on myself to, you know, and if my following grows, that's great. But I'd rather some of the connections that I've made on Instagram with fellow photographers are way more important to me than having, I'd rather have three of those than another 5,000 followers. Like, so yeah, I think you just have to kind of not really care and just put out your best work regardless. And if it might feel like you're shouting into an abyss, but also then go post it on your Facebook and the people that know you in real life are going to fawn over you and it's going to feel great. So if you need some sort of like validation, I recommend that highly because the people in my life are so, so kind and it's very nice. And the odds are like a lot of them are not following other food photographers. So you're the only source of that kind of content in their life. And it like will bring other people joy, I think. But in terms of getting clients, I mean, I position myself as a photographer, not as an influencer or somebody that is going to post on my own account. I can, and I'm not gonna like pad my numbers or anything. Like you see like what kind of interaction and traction and reach I get. And I say point blank too, you know, paid promotions on Instagram perform a lot worse too. So I position myself in terms of being a photographer and someone that a client will come to for content for their own social media, for their website, for stuff like that. And that's really what my skill set speaks to. Sorry, dogs. Okay. so yeah, I think I just like to keep my portfolio, my website as fresh as I can. And I have a lot of other images too, that if I'm reaching out directly to a client and it's a meet client or whatever, I will send them other stuff that I have shot in that same vein, that may be very specific to them or beverage or whatever. I have a certain amount of stuff on my profile, but also like for wine companies, I have a lot of different images that I could show them. So yeah, I have an ongoing list on Instagram of potential clients. If I see a sponsored post from somebody and their photo content isn't great, I automatically save them, because them having a sponsored story feed or post or whatever means that they have some sort of budget. So I like to keep that in mind, and that they're putting something into their advertising. They probably would like to put something into their images too and don't know where to start. So I've reached out to some that has been successful for me in the past. And then I also tag brands that I like that I actually buy. And that has also worked out too, where they've reached out and said like, this image is gorgeous. We'd love to work together or whatever. And I usually give that image to them for free for organic social. One post, first taste is free, basically. And I ask for an email address to email it to. And so I email them that and the terms, which is basically that they can only use it for organic. If they're going to use it for any sort of sponsored content, then they can license the image from me. But that has opened the door a lot of the time for me to then, you know, pitch a project to them and put together a proposal for them. So that's worked out. And that worked out most recently with Mount Olive Pickles. And I just wrapped up my first project with them, and I'm super, super excited. I have so many pickles in my garage right now.
I did a project for a pickle company recently too. And the amount of pickles, it's insane. Yeah.
So awesome.
I'm like running out of people who I can give pickles to without seeming like a total psycho. I know I brought you 3 jars of pickles, but I have 3 more. And they're just like, what's happening? So I'm curious how you keep growing. Like, what are some ways that you continue to educate yourself and just learn and keep up with the industry?
Yeah. I love in-person workshops. So obviously that's been like, I wouldn't have gone probably when I was pregnant anyway, or when I had a fresh baby. So, I mean, I would have missed out probably on the last 2 years anyway, but obviously with the pandemic, those haven't been happening. But I have done some online workshops during this time too, with Eva Cosmos Flores and B, and that was fantastic. But I mean, I did some online courses early on, and then I watched the Bite Shot. I watched every video on the Bite Shot, and then even when she puts out new stuff. But also like Peter McKinnon on YouTube is great, even though he's a completely different type of photographer, really. But I also love to watch cooking videos and just see how those are filmed. It's kind of the ongoing joke that I'm never like not learning. Like, we had a beach vacation over the summer, and I brought like all of my food photography books to reread or skim through. And constantly practicing. Like I said, like my Instagram, I usually, when I post on Instagram, I took that photo earlier that day. And it's like, I feel like, oh, I haven't posted in a week. I really should post what is in season right now. What's happening? Like, what do I feel like shooting? Or is there like a challenge going on? And so kind of just like pushing myself to create like that, I think kind of keeps things fresh and, keeps me learning and stuff like that. And then I always try and, you know, like master some different type of lighting technique or something like that. And I'm constantly shooting beverages. So I'm trying to get really, you know, good at lighting bottles and reflective surfaces is an ongoing struggle, but something that you can always learn more. And then I try and kind of give myself like a big project or a big something like to aim towards each quarter. So last quarter I did like a huge, not huge, but pretty big dinner party in our backyard. And I bought a table off Facebook Marketplace. I sanded it. I painted it. We did a huge spread of food. And I had my 2 sister-in-laws, who are both absolutely stunning, come over. And my good friend, who's a people family portrait photographer, and she helped me shoot. And it was a blast. And it just kind of pushed me to like, to style something bigger than, you know, what is in my studio every time, tabletop kind of stuff, to style an actual event. Is something that I love doing. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, and then just reading all the stuff all the time. I have news alerts for a lot of things, and I read, you know, still business news and stuff like that too, just to keep up with what's going on.
That's great. So another thing that you are very good at that I've been hearing from a lot of creative directors that they want to see when they're hiring someone is video and stop motion and all of the motion movement things. So I feel like you were a little ahead of the curve on that. Like you were really quick to pick it up and get good at it, it seems like. So what, can you speak a little bit about that and how important it's been in helping you get more clients?
Sure. Yeah. I remember 10 years ago for Valentine's Day, I made Matt, my husband, a video. And like, I have a YouTube that has videos going back that they're probably so embarrassing. I don't even know. But I have always been super into video and like capturing video. I love watching video clips and, you know, I feel like they tell so much more of a story than just a photo. So I have always been good at editing. I've had Final Cut on my computer forever, and I just kind of started to play around with that. And then I started to do client recipe videos through a agency that I work with a while ago. So I have a lot of those, but I can't use those in my portfolio because they belong to the agency. So, but then they're also not necessarily things that I would want in my portfolio anyway. It's not exactly my style, but that's fine. But I learned a ton, obviously, through doing that and setting that kind of stuff up. But I've also, ever since I started with my Canon 5D Mark IV, I've shot remotely, and being able to see what's in the frame, I think, is what makes my flat lays as attractive as they are. But it also means that I can pour a drink with one hand and capture with the other wirelessly. And I just have my hand on the space bar on my wireless keyboard. And that's 99% of the time when you see it. Sometimes my husband's helping me, but usually it's just one hand is doing something and the other hand is firing. So I quickly learned I already knew how to make animated GIFs from forever ago. And so I kind of just applied that knowledge to shooting multiple frames and like a pour shot and turning that into stop motion. And I started offering that to my clients, and especially beverage clients. Obviously you're going to get a pour shot for most beverage campaigns or projects that you do. So I kind of just throw in stop motions, and it really kind of sets me apart. And I think it makes my clients want to work with me again because they get video content as well as still images. So if you can do it, if you can play around with it and learn it, it's very, very fun. And it's a great way. And I don't think it's stop motion in particular is not that much work. You're editing one photo, and then you're kind of applying those edits to all of the images, and then you're putting them into a video editing software and changing the duration of the clip, and that's it. Like, I might make it sound a little bit easier than it actually is, but it's not a ton of work. So I recommend learning it because I think it's very, very fun and a good way to set yourself apart and to create kind of easy video content now that, you know, Instagram is really putting a precedent on video content.
Yeah, I was just getting super comfortable with stop motion. And then last week, a creative director told me, like, oh, just so you know, we want to see more than stop motion. I was like, dang it, I need to talk to Allie so I can get inspired to work on other types of video as well.
Yeah, I think the key for other types of video, if you have two cameras, it's really fun to have two different angles. If you can get one that's kind of up close and then one that's either overhead or a different fixed angle, and then you can cut back and forth between the two sets of footage, and that makes it, then it's not as noticeable if the camera shakes or something like that. You have two different options to pick from. And then especially for reels and stuff, you know, just like keep it snappy. And one other thing that I learned from my wedding videographer, he was phenomenal. He said, never start a clip static, like always have something in motion at the start of a clip. So you're constantly moving from one thing to the next, and that keeps it fluid and stuff. So if you can apply those things, but yeah, video is really fun too, but it's a ton of work.
Yeah, it's definitely a different kind of mindset that you have to go into stuff. Well, I mean, just even the point about not keeping things static when all images are static.
Right.
So yeah,
right. Just always movement for video. And I think people really like, especially with like reels and TikToks, the audio component of cooking and stuff. So that obviously is like I said, I'm in the middle of my house with no doors on my studio. So I have to tell everyone in the house to leave or not leave their room or be quiet completely so I can capture like peppercorns going into a pot because I want that audio. So it is, it's like, and preparing food on camera as opposed to styling a dish and then bringing it into your studio is just completely different.
Right. Yeah.
So I that's a big thing, is I try to remind myself to, you know, price accordingly, because throwing in a stop motion is one thing, throwing in a recipe video is a whole different beast. So yeah, moving forward with that, hopefully.
So I'm curious if you could touch on this then for a second. I get a lot of questions about if people should price per project or price with a day rate. And I've come to a place recently where I found that I really need to be charging a day rate as we especially move into the video world and things where the scope can grow and things can take longer. And we're really trying to kind of navigate this new landscape of the video and the motion and all that stuff that just takes longer. So have you found that you've needed to really just charge a day rate so that if it goes over, you can charge for another day? Or what's kind of your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I work so, I thrive working autonomously. So I don't like to be, you know, on a clock. If a client needs real-time approval, I upcharge a lot for that because I need the freedom to, you know, shoot in the middle of the night if I need to, especially with baby now. But I often feel like some of my best work comes out of the studio at like 11 o'clock at night. So if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. And, you know, and I don't take for granted the fact that like I can spend a Wednesday afternoon with my family and that we can all go out for a while or whatever, and I can push my work into to later in the day. So I price per scene because I really have a feeling like that is what kind of takes the most out of me is set creation basically. Because it's getting to be more elaborate for a lot of the things that I'm shooting, especially like Thanksgiving holiday season kind of stuff. Like I have my Christmas tree out right now in my studio. I price accordingly by that, because once that is set up and the lighting is done and all that, the images are kind of gravy after that. And especially editing those images, kind of you take, there's a lot of detail work that goes into it, but once you have like kind of your initial set of edits, they can be applied across the same images since they're all the same lighting scenario and stuff like that. So that's how I do it. And then I offer a kind of bulk discounts, and then anything like video is a la carte on top of that, because that I know is what kind of will take the most time and money and stuff like that. So I price by that. I also, it's probably wrong, but I give my clients a ton of freebies. I'll say like 2+ images and I'll give them like 10, because I can't help myself and I don't want to have them pick or then not pick and not get those images. That's kind of, and I think that brings people back as well. So if I can throw in a stop motion here or there, if I can throw in some additional images, I'm happy to do that for my clients.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong. I do the same. And I think that when you've gotten to a place where you're really pricing your worth, it's easy to over deliver because you're not operating from a place of scarcity. So it makes it really easy to then be generous because your expenses are covered and all of that.
I think that's good. I already shot these things. Like I feel like it would be a disservice to me and them to let them just sit on a hard drive somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
They deserve them. So.
So I've already kept you way longer than I was planning because there's just so much that I wanted to ask you. So I have one last question. Let's say you were having a dinner party, and you could have one person dead or alive there. Who would you have and what would you serve?
I heard this on your last episode and I was like, I gotta think of my answer. And I don't want to be like a downer, but it would probably be my mom pre-14. Cause I just know like she'd be real proud of where we are right now and the cook that I've become. So I would probably make pasta with chicken cutlets, cause that was my favorite meal growing up. And you know, she sees me every day and she knows kind of what's going on, but to be able to do that would have been really, really nice. But you know, who knows where I would be if all of this hadn't happened. So I maybe still would have a desk job. I maybe still would have a commute. I wouldn't have the kid that I have. So.
It's amazing all the things that can happen when you just go for it.
Yeah. Yep. That's if you are on the fence, just dive in. I mean, if you have the means to do it, that's my biggest piece of advice. And practice. Anyone that tells me I'm talented, my response is always practice, because I'll show you images from 5 years ago. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. It's practice, and it's the 10,000 hours that you got to get to.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's, I think everyone has hideous before photos, and I don't know if anyone starts off with totally beautiful images. No. I haven't seen that. So
there's no like before or after, like you take a course and then you're immediately phenomenal. It's all practice.
Yeah. Even I feel like taking a course, a lot of times it's just the fact that you're investing in the need to keep practicing.
Correct. Yeah.
More than anything else, it's just that it's going to keep you practicing.
Right. So, right. Absolutely. Give yourself homework and just try everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Allie. This was so great.
This was. Let's do it every week.
Yes. Oh, I would love that. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Manual Mode. I hope you found that as helpful as I did. Until now, the show has been sponsor-free, but I've decided that this episode is sponsored by my presets. Yep, I have a few sets of presets and editing guides on my website, mariahbrook.com, and if you want to check them out, I am giving 30% off with the code PODCAST. So just a little way to support the show. A lot goes into making this, and a lot goes into keeping it ad-free for right now. So if you can contribute in that way, that'd be great. Otherwise, if you can rate, review, and subscribe, that also really helps the show. And I will see you next week. I'm Mariah Sautel, and you've been listening to Manual Mode.